I think our listeners will not be surprised by this because we did talk about this a few months ago. But right now, the situation with the czars and the president, it's escalated to becoming a constitutional issue, and especially for the Senate. And I think what our listeners should know is that this is a really extraordinary and unusual thing that we're seeing right now. You're not so surprised when you see members of one party, and if the president is of a different party, to have these discussions and investigations. But what we're really talking about is a Congress and a president who are in the same party, and the fact that they're having a hearing about his management style, the way in which he is appointing czar after czar after czar, is being challenged by the Senate. And I think that's what we see is a little bit unusual. And I think it's because a lot of these senators, they've actually had a lot more experience in government. Some of them have been in government longer than President Obama has actually been alive. And they've seen these turf wars that can evolve between folks when they share the same sorts of responsibilities and accountabilities. And I think the Senate is asking, what exactly is the president's management strategy with these czars?
Yeah, so what can the Senate really do about it at this point? I mean, there's no legality. There's no law against this kind of presidential advisor. And so are they just whistling in the dark at it, or baying at the moon, I should say, or is there something you think they could do?
Well, I think there are several things that we see happening right now. Part of it is just sort of the warning shot over the bow, because you've had a history of czars throughout government, but they've always been targeted and timely, and they've served a very specific purpose. I think what you see that's different right now about Obama and his czars is that there are so many of them. If you remember, you have about 15 folks who serve in the cabinet, but what we see now growing is the shadow government, where he's got over 30 positions. A lot of folks aren't yet in their position, but they've been appointed, or they're about to be appointed, who are czars. And they seem to be having the same sorts of responsibilities as some of the cabinet folks. So, for example, you have Carol Browner, who's a energy and environment czar, but there's also a secretary of energy, and there's an administrator of the EPA. And those two folks also seem to have the same kind of a job description. But you get some people. For example, we just saw it. It was sort of a litmus test, the Van Jones situation, the green job czar. And when his resignation came out, several things came to light. There's a whole new category of czars. There are czars who, they don't have a budget necessarily. They don't have a clear mission. The president doesn't actually seem to speak with them very often. And they're not even located in the White House. And so I'm calling this new category of folks the czardines, because they're really the little fish in the czar pond in D.C. And it looks like they're going to get eaten pretty quickly.
Well, we had the pay czar coming out now to talk about the 175 major financial institutions that he's reviewing pay for and will be reducing for many of them, or issuing new orders about their pay packages, reducing compensation to, you know, to something that may be akin to like a stock option that can't be cashed in for several years. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in my life.
Right. I mean, the breadth and scope of their powers, or their, and the things that they're delving into, I think, is broader than anything we've ever seen. To be fair, there are some czars who actually have gone through the normal Senate confirmation and vetting process. The drug czar has been around for 21 years. He has a budget that's approved by Congress every year. It's a huge budget. But the fact of the matter is, there are a lot of folks who maybe they were approved sometime during a previous administration or another. But in this particular administration, the Senate hasn't seen them. They're not reportable to or accountable to the Senate. And there's no real oversight by Congress on them. And I think that's what Congress is disturbed about.
We're talking to Loretta Doane, Federal News Radio commentator, former GSA administrator, and you can find her work at federalnewsradio.com.
And you have some jeers and cheers again this week. Let's go to the jeers first.
Well, honestly, anybody who's ever submitted a bid knows that if it's even 1 minute late, it doesn't count. I mean, they will literally turn you away from the door and say the bid's no good. And so here we have a deadline that the president himself set for giving the guidance on the procurement reform, which was going to be the end of September. And I know they're gathering the data, and I know there are, you know, rumblings that it's going to come out hopefully mid-October maybe, or something like that. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't set a good standard when the very issue that you're dealing with, you miss the deadline and you're about to give other people certain deadlines and things like that. So I think we should walk the walk and talk the talk. And so for that, the White House gets a jeer.
The White House jeer. And but the White House kind of gets a cheer, too.
Absolutely.
All right. So both sides
the flip
today.
Side. Well, I don't know if our listeners have had a chance to go and check out the saveaward.gov website, but it's really a great example of using federal workers to get the best out of government. Because I've long said that federal workers actually know where the savings can be because they work with these programs every day. They know what works. They know what doesn't work. And on this saveaward.gov, federal workers are able to write in for their recommendations. And apparently in the first week, they got over 10,000 submissions. And they're actually going to be giving an award for the best submission in another week. And so I think that'll be pretty exciting to see what is the project that is going to garner the attention and the award. And hopefully we'll get to see some metrics, some measurements on how much time it's going to take for them to implement that change.
Yeah, that's going to be funded in the 2011 budget. And I'll get to meet the president. And the agency that turns in the most suggestions, I think, is also going to be recognized for their participation. So they're really trying to get people involved and engaged in this.
And do the people get a piece of the action if they cause money savings? They don't get any bonus, do they?
Unfortunately not, which
that's
is
That's strictly
odd.
A corporate phenomenon.
Or illegal, the QTAM stuff, where you can get a piece of the action, but that's a pity. They probably would be even more incentivized. But these are pure, just trying to do the best for the American people, which makes it a much higher standard that they're trying to achieve here.
And I think there, as you say, I think there are plenty of good suggestions that will come from the federal government, that there are plenty of people who do have ideas, just don't know how to get them up the chain.
What I really hope is that we're going to see that this is going to be institutionalized and it'll be something that isn't just disbanded in a two-week period, but they'll just leave the website up, allow people to keep sending in recommendations, and maybe they'll even start tracking agency by agency which ones they implement.
You know what? They need a savings czar.
Oh,
maybe
no.
That's the way to institutionalize this. Just kidding.
Yeah.
Sort of.
I think they should make Loretta Doan the savings czar. What do you think?
No. I think Tom said it earlier. Czars came to a very bad end. This is not a position that I would want. I mean, you've got the Senate confirmed people with their turf. You've got the czars. Someone's going to have to go.